I'm Pablo Martel, and this is Roads and Riches. Episode 6 of Roads and Riches. We're recording today's episode in honor of Small Business Week, and today we have on Michael Desiato, the founder of Business Transition Specialists and author of The Inside Game, a book about how your key employees can help you cash out and retire in style. Michael is an absolute wealth of knowledge, and prior to founding Business Transition Specialists, spent about 40 years in the tax industry as a seasoned tax partner and even a managing partner of a tax firm, having gone through a sale process himself. Michael is a CPA and a certified exit planner, and again, brings a wealth of knowledge, and super excited to have this conversation with him. If you get anything from today's episode, know that if you are a seller or you're looking to potentially exit a business at some point in time in the future, time is on your side. You cannot start planning early enough, and you'll see plenty of examples as to why that is. If you're enjoying the podcast, please consider liking, subscribing, head on over to our YouTube channel, make sure you get those notifications. Let us know how we're doing. You can even head over to roadsandriches.com and hit the little support button if you're interested in supporting the pod. Hope you enjoy today's episode. All right, Mike, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Paula.
Today we have Mike Desiato on, CPA, tax specialist, founder of Business Transition Specialist, author of The Inside Game. And this book is something that is, I think, of particular interest today more so than really any time because of the vast number of businesses that are out there that are getting ready to change hands. And I'm just going to highlight something from the foreword of your book real quick, because I think it kind of sets the tone of the conversation here. But in the foreword, you have, there are roughly 6 million privately operating companies in the United States, and it represents roughly $30 trillion in sales. And according to U.S. Census data, baby boomers aged 54 to 72 own 62% of these companies. And so a little bit further down, it kind of gives some context, and assuming some rough numbers here, we're set to have almost $10 trillion of, we'll call it, value trade hands, or look to hopefully trade hands over, you know, the coming years. And, you know, right now is a time that the small business community, and, you know, we'll coin the SMB community, which has, you know, really caught some steam. I know on Twitter and on LinkedIn, there's a big community rallying around this. And it's pretty interesting because you're getting a lot of high pedigree students that are coming out of, you know, Ivy League schools that would have, you know, otherwise decided to go, you know, pursue a career at Goldman Sachs, McKinsey, you know, somewhere on Wall Street. But instead, they're seeing this opportunity and they're going out and they're starting a search fund. I think a bigger opportunity really lies with the folks that are getting ready to exit these businesses. I want to talk a little bit about that. You've seen it firsthand. You've been involved firsthand in an exit yourself, you know, some years ago when you were managing partner of a tax firm that, you know, you guys ended up selling. So I want to set the stage there. And so the first thing I want to talk about, and, you know, as you see it, is you have somebody that's been running a healthy business for quite a long time. And there's going to come a point in time where they say, hey, I'm ready to retire. And they start their planning and everything. These are businesses, they don't trade on public markets. They're not very liquid. And so because of that, there's a time component here that, you know, needs to be taken into consideration. And so from what you see, I want to talk a little bit about how much time it really takes to start planning for a healthy and really a successful exit to really maximize that overall liquidity.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a great question. And, you know, I always tell owners that time is your friend here, right? Because the more time you have, the more opportunity you give yourself to make mistakes, and people do. The more time you have, the more opportunity you have to make mistakes, step back, recalibrate, and move forward. And many of the things that you would want to do to increase the value of your company, in order to implement them properly, take time. And if you give yourself a small window in which to do these things, you're really setting yourself up for failure. Speaking of failure, the statistics on successful business transitions are pretty bleak. Approximately 70%, sometimes it's 80, 70 to 80% of businesses, when they go to market, fail to close. So their transactions are not successful. And one of the reasons for this, one of the main reasons, is that there's often a value gap. There's also a value gap expectation issue, right? The owner thinks their company's worth X. Buyers come in due diligence and say it's worth Y. So there's a value gap difference there, and that kind of kills a lot of deals. And one of the reasons for that is that it goes back to the amount of time that the owner has spent preparing the business for a successful transition or sale. And if you look at the statistics, they're pretty alarming. I saw one stat which says that 75% of business owners do no planning at all, hardly any, before they take their companies to market. Okay, and then only like 65% spend a year of planning in advance, right? Not 65%. 65% only spend a year, right? So, there's not a lot of planning involved. People just get tired and they say, I'm out, and they just go to market and they figure, they cross their fingers and say, well, let's hope for the best. Of course, they'll tell you that their friend who they met, or their buddies who they have been spending time with, have told them, who have similar businesses, well, I got 6X of EBITDA, I got 5X of EBITDA. And so they expect that. But, oftentimes they don't understand that that company's, their friend's business is not necessarily theirs. And so it takes a good deal of time to do it right. And if you fail to spend that time, you could be one of those 70 or 80%ers who just get disappointed with the process and then back away.
Yep. And I think, one of the things that we've talked about before, and something that you really focus on as well, is helping business owners understand what the value of their business is. And I think one of the things that's really important to understand is there's the quantitative aspect. Sure. Mm-hmm. You can grab the P&L and mm-hmm. you can look at what adjusted earnings are. You can do your Q of E, all these things. But there's a lot of qualitative factors that go into what that multiple is going to look like, right? And I think that's an important thing to highlight. And that's one of the things, that I see, that I would step back and say, well, this is probably one of those things that you really need to kind of zero in on and give yourself enough time to optimize the qualitative aspects of that business in order to really maximize that multiple. So what are maybe some of the common, qualitative characteristics that you'll typically see with a business that separates somebody that's getting, let's say, a 2X, multiple versus 5-6 plus?
Very good question. There's been a study on this. There's been studies on this. And the studies have shown that when you talk about multiples, right, the first two turns, 1 to 2X, is really a function of your company's financial performance, right? Your normalized EBITDA, your financial performance as reflected on your financial statements. 1 to 2X is determined by that. Turns of above 2X are a function of the intangibles of your business, the intangible value of your business. And in the exit planning world, we focus on four major buckets of intangibles. First bucket is the value of your human capital. Second bucket is the value of your structural capital. The third is the value of your customer capital. And the fourth is your social capital, which is just another way of saying your culture. So the four elements that I help business owners focus in on when I help them value, because I do a value estimate of their business, and I do an assessment of how well those four capitals, those four intangible capitals, are in their business. And based on an assessment of them on a scale of 1 to 100, I then correlate that score to a business value range. So For example, if a company scores 50, 56%, 60% on all those four intangibles, even though they may be in a company or in an industry that trades somewhere between 2x and 6x, they're not at 6x. They're not at 2x either. They're somewhere in between. Right? They may be at 3.5 or maybe 4x. So realistically, when they go to market, they're not getting the top end of that multiple. They're going to get somewhere in the middle given that score. So I help people understand that. And then the next step in the process is, okay, now that you know where you are, the real question is how much do you need that business to be worth? So when you walk away, which could be today or it could be year, hopefully it's years from now because we're doing this 5 to 7 years in advance, what do you need that value to be to fund your next adventure, your next chapter, right?
Right.
So when you walk away, you're leaving your business. And that's another important fact too, is I help people need, the owners need to understand that they really need to develop not only a plan to improve the value of your business, not only do they need to have a financial plan that quantifies how much they're going to need when they retire to live comfortably, but just as important and often overlooked is what are they going to do when they walk away? Do they have a plan for that? Because if they don't have a plan for that, I can tell you that they're probably not going to think about leaving because they don't know what to do with themselves. You know, I've had people come to me and say, Mike, if I don't go to work every day, I don't know what to do with myself. So chances are they're not going to even plan for their leaving. You know, they'll die in their chair. They'll die at their desk. So it's very important that that owners attack three things. We call it the three legs of the stool, right? Each one of them has to be of equal length and of equal importance. Otherwise, the stool collapses. And those three are, what is your personal purpose and plan after you leave your business? Number two is, what is that plan going to cost you? What is that number? How much do you need to have, you know, set aside in an investment account to support that personal plan when you leave? And number three is, how much of that needs to come from your business? And what is your business worth today? And what does it need to be worth to fill that gap?
Yep. And I know one of the first times, you know, we even started talking about all this, you talked about some of the most successful probably business owners and some of the most ones that will have the most amount of success, obviously, in achieving the most, you know, optimal, let's say, liquidity, you know, out of their business and having the most successful exit are the ones that start planning the earliest. And all the three things that you're talking about, you don't necessarily need to be even thinking about selling when you start thinking about these things.
Right.
You know, you may be a relatively young business owner, you know, you may be, you know, in your 40s, you may be, you know, you may have been at this, you know, for a little while now, but you need to start thinking about those things of, okay, what's my business worth today, even if I'm not going to sell, you know, or I'm not even immediately thinking about that. And how does that fit into my bigger financial picture? Because ultimately, some of the most value that, you know, a lot of these folks have is what they've created and what they've spent their life's work on. And I think there's also, you know, some pretty alarming statistics out there that go to show how many of them won't sell. Some of them that they go to sell and they anticipate selling and they just don't. And, you know, a lot of it because this planning didn't happen.
Well, again, 70 to 80% of businesses when they go to market fail to transact. And the reason is, again, they're not ready. Their businesses are not ready for the buyer's due diligence, and there's a value gap expectation. The owner thinks the values, the company is worth this, and the buyers come in, they do due diligence, and they say, well, wait a minute, and I'm stealing a book title that's really apropos here, but a guy wrote a book called Your Baby's Ugly. And the buyers come in and tell the owner, you know, your baby's ugly. You know, and the owners get turned off by that, and it kind of kills deals, right? They walk away. So it is important for them to spend the proper amount of time. And the other thing I would also say too is this: even if you're not thinking of selling now, even if you're not thinking of selling in the next 5 to 7 years, the things that I show people that they should be doing to increase the value of their company is nothing more than just good old business strategy, right?
Right.
So I'm telling people, look, make sure you have a seasoned and successful and deep management team. Oh, that's good business, right? Make sure you can hire, retain, and recruit good people. Make sure you have a diverse customer base, right? Make sure you have systems that are documented. Make sure your financial reporting is robust. You're getting accurate financial statements and you're getting KPIs reported to you on a weekly basis that help you understand where you are vis-a-vis your goals, right? Those are just some of the, also, are you fostering innovation and creativity in your company? All these things increase the value of your company when you go to market, but they are things you should be doing.
Right.
It's just ordinary good business practices. So in the exit planning world, we say exit planning is really nothing more than just good business planning. And if you do that and you continually do that, what you do allow yourself to be is always exit ready. So you may, someone may pick up, you may get a call one day from a PE firm or a strategic buyer saying, hey, we're interested in buying you. Well, if you've been doing this stuff all along, you'll be in a good spot to be able to entertain that and get high value. If you're not, and you say, oh my God, I got to start preparing for this, you're gonna be disappointed because you're just not doing the things that are increasing the transferable value of the company.
Right. So you brought up a good point there. You may get a call from private equity buyer, strategic buyer. And I think what's interesting is, you see the big, I would say you see the big hits usually, obviously, like anything else, in a news story or on social media of the successes, right? And the big bites of the apple that, a PE firm may take or something, right? But that's not always the best buyer of these businesses. A lot of times, and one of the things that you hit on is a strong and a deep management team and having key employees in a business. So one of the things I want to talk about is exiting to, potentially folks that are in the business already, that are employees, maybe a group of them or maybe one key employee. And I want to talk a little bit about, the financing behind it as well.
Sure.
I think it's something that can be very intimidating for somebody. Maybe, right. You're young, you've been in a business, you might be in a trades. I mean, the trades are the things that have been, hugely valuable, let's say, over the course of the last few years, private equity coming into that space. And those have been, hot buyers, for the last few years. But you're a young kid. You've, been at it for a while. You've, got a sturdy foundation, but you see a big price tag and you start, the wheels start turning. You're like, man, how could I ever pull that off? I actually, feel like I could run this business. I could do this and I could do it well.
Right.
And so what does that look like? So let's talk about, I guess those few things. So, one, selling to a key employer, a group of key employees, what does that look like?
Sure. And it's, oftentimes a good strategy, particularly if the owner is someone who wants to maintain the legacy of their company, right? Does not want it to be sold to an outside strategic buyer and or a private equity firm who, as we know, when they go in there, even though they promise we won't change anything, they're going to change everything. And so your company a year from now will not look the same. Most of the people will be gone. It'll be a totally different company. But there are owners who say, no, I really built this. I want to continue the legacy of my company. And also, I have a debt of gratitude, if you will, to my key employees. They helped me get here. And I want to, I want to pass this on to them because I feel like they've helped me and I want to help them, right? I want to return the favor. So those reasons, those are some of the reasons why. And the last reason also is that maybe your company is just not a good target for private equity and or strategic buyer, right? Because they're looking at bigger fish. They're looking at companies that have at least 3 to 5 or more million in normalized EBITDA. Your company may be making 1 or 2 million. Nice company, but not really something that really catches the eye of private equity and or a strategic buyer, but it's a great company. I mean, people can make a good living off of it. So there's all of those three or any combination of those three is a reason why an owner will say, look, I'd love to sell to my key employees. But one of the biggest, one of the biggest pushbacks or one of the biggest issues I hear from owners who think about that is that I'd love to do it, Mike, but they don't have any money. So how are they going to buy me out? They don't have any money. So I say, well, you got to be careful there because there is a way. And again, going back to the issue of time, there is a way to gradually transfer to them some of the ownership of the company while maintaining control. So I don't advise owners to just sell the whole company to their key employees in return for a promissory note or something, because that's highly risky. I tell owners, look, you can start selling them non-voting stock or non-voting membership interests, depending on your entity form. And they will give you back some notes. They'll give you a note back. And then from company cash flows, and again, you're going to construct the plan that if certain financial benchmarks are met by them, all right, there'll be profit distributions, and then they'll pay you back on the notes they give you for those non-voting shares. And once they get to a level around, and it can be as low as 2.5%, but usually it's 5 to 10%. Once they get 2.5 to 10% of ownership in the entity, if the total value of the company is, I'd say, under $10 million, which is, you know, if you're in a 5X, if you're a $2 million EBITDA company, 5X is 10 million. If the total value is 10 million or less, then I know SBA lenders that'll come in and lend the company enough money to redeem the owner out completely. And that SBA financing will be on a 10-year amortization basis. So it's a 10-year note, very reasonable terms. And there's the money. So, you know, the key employees don't have to come up with, you know, all the money. I mean, all they need is about, again, as I said, somewhere between 2.5 and maybe as high as 10% of the value of the company, which they can acquire in a year or two as they hit financial goals and as the owner starts selling non-voting shares to them. Once they get to that threshold, the SBA can come in, lend the company enough money to redeem out the existing shareholder, which means that now they become, you know, the majority owners and the controlling owners, and it works. Now, one of the preconditions, though, and everyone, you know, that makes sense. Everyone shakes their head. He goes, yeah, that sounds like a good plan. But one of the things that is a prerequisite that has to be met is you have to make sure that the key employees, who, although they can run, they run the business. I mean, they do a lot of the key things, and you may be able to go on vacation for a month and not have to work. But the question, the real seminal question is, do they want to be owners? Are they willing to accept the risks and rewards of being an owner, which means personal guarantees on debt, you know, making payroll monthly, biweekly, whenever you make it, you know, dealing with all the stresses of actually running the company, not just working in it, but working on it and above it. Are they willing? Do they really want that responsibility? Because that's very critical. Even though you can do all this stuff, if you don't have people that say, I want to be an owner, then the whole thing doesn't.
Yeah. And I'm sure the SBA is very critical of that. Sure. Obviously, they're taking on a ton of risk here.
Sure.
In order to make these things happen, I'd say, one, you probably see it actually more so than not where the owner may even be the one that's introducing this plan.
It usually is the owner, Pablo, because the owner says, I want out, Mike, in 5 years. I'm dealing with one now. The guy wants out in a couple of years, 3 years, and he loves his employees. He really feels obligated to do something with them and for them. And we put together a plan where he's doing exactly what I said. Now, the other portion of this is there's tax issues, right? Now, I'm going to put my tax hat on. If I had a tax hat, I'll be putting it on right now. But you got to be careful with taxes here, because you could wind up giving Uncle Sam a disproportional amount of free cash flow, and you need company free cash flow to finance all this, right? So the last thing you want to do is set up a situation where you're paying double tax, where there's double tax in this scenario. What I mean by that is, if you set it up where the employees are going to own part of the business, they're going to pay tax on their share of the earnings, right? Usually a pass-through entity. And then they take those after-tax earnings and they pay it to the owner for the stock of the company. That's double tax. The earnings are being taxed once, and the company shares are being sold, and they're being taxed. There's another level of tax there, right? Although there's different rates of tax. One is ordinary, one is capital gains. You're paying double tax. So what I do with the owners is, if they have enough time and they're not willing to walk away, they want to walk away. Again, time is your friend here. and they still want to work a little bit, and maybe they have to stick around a little bit to mentor the key employees up a little bit, to introduce them to key customers and vendors. And there's a lot of mentoring maybe that needs yet to be done in training. So they want to stick around, but they want to start backing away. So they want to continue to work for a little bit. I look at the total package of wealth they're going to walk away with. What I mean by that is if they tell me, listen, I want $5 million after tax when I walk out of here, $5 million. How are you going to get me my $5 million? Well, it's not going to be all from the sale of the stock, because that could be a double tax situation. What I do kind of put together is a plan whereby if they stay on, they're still getting profit distributions from the company. Okay. So that's only taxed once. And they may be getting salaries. And even if they don't get enough when they walk away, there could be, deferred compensation plans put in place where even though they're gone, they're getting paid compensation by the company that they just sold. But at least that compensation is deductible to the new owners, mm-hmm. and taxed to them. All right, it's ordinary rates. But again, my goal is to get them the net after tax amount they want. So there's a number of ways of putting this together by using, by not necessarily just by selling the shares, but by a combination of selling the shares, profit distributions, deferred comp. How do you get the whole package put together so when the owner walks away, they get the net they want? And it's also preserving the company cash flow so it's not being all double taxed. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's the approach I take. And I model this out and I show them how it can all work. And of course, you know, the key employees have to understand it too. This is the deal. That's kind of the way I approach it.
Yep. So maybe let's drill into that for a second. Sure. Talk about tax a little bit more here. Sure. So common structures that you'll see in, you know, small business environment, you're going to see single member LLCs, you're going to see partnerships, and you're going to see S-corps, mm-hmm. right? That's going to be the most common. Mm-hmm. So of those three, right, you're going to have, you know, ton of different scenarios. And there's going to be many different scenarios in which you can, you know, structure exits, and it's all going to be contingent upon who you're selling to, whether or not it is key employees, whether it's an external party, whatnot. But sticking to, let's just say, key employees, right? What are maybe some of the most common misconceptions when, let's say, they're exiting from, you know, a tax perspective, right? That maybe come as a shock, and they're sitting there going, well, you know, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. And maybe what are some of the you know, common structures maybe that are, you know, more unique that you've been involved with and putting together in some of these exits?
Well, one of them is just this I call it the two-step plan, where the initial transaction is a sale of non-voting. So if you're an S corporation, right, you can have the only difference you can have in ownership is you can have voting and non-voting stock. Other than that, everything else needs to be distributed proportionate to ownership, right? So, but you can have non-voting and voting shares. So usually if they're an S corp and they want to stay an S corp, we do a recapitalization tax free, right? We issue voting and non-voting shares to the existing owner. So now he or she owns voting and non-voting. And then that person, that he or she, sells non-voting shares to the key employees over a period of time based on certain financial performance measures that he or she sets for them to hit before he or she would sell them shares. And usually those shares are sold at a discounted value, right? It's not full fair market value. We discount it for lack of marketability control. And it's a good deal for them. And so that's allowable because you can have that dichotomy and ownership. You can have voting and non-voting shares. And then eventually, the key employees can go out and get financing and then buy the owner out, which gives the owner capital gain treatment. And of course, depending on how much they buy him out. So if they buy out 80% or more of the owner, if they get to that point, then you may have to check me on this, but I think it's 336E. I'm using code sections. I'm throwing code sections out now. But there is a code section now that allows them to, and the selling owner, to allow them, the buyers, to get a basis step up in the assets to fair market value if they buy 80% or more, right? Remember that? There's like 338 talks about if a company buys another S corporation, you could, when there's an 80% more change in ownership, you can get a basis step up. So there is that, but usually I'm advising the owner, I'm not advising the buyers, but the buyer's tax counsel will say, wait a minute, we want to get a basis step up in this, you know, we're paying this money. So yeah, you can do it with an S corporation. The other way you can do it as well, if you don't want to deal with the S corporation in that particular election and going through those mechanics, is that you can do a reorganization of the current S corporation into an LLC, a tax-free reorganization, into an LLC. And as you sell non-voting membership interests to the new owners, you form, now you have a partnership. So now you've made that S corporation a partnership, so that when those new owners buy out the existing owner for the majority share, there's an automatic basis step up because it's a partnership. And you don't have to go through that 336E methodology to get the basis step up. So there are ways, you know, there are tax issues around this that need to be resolved. And, you know, I think it's a win-win. I think they can be done to the benefit of both the selling shareholder and the acquiring shareholders.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it goes, I think, you know, Justin, you know, talking about this and in this conversation particularly, that if you're somebody that is looking to sell your business or you're looking to potentially purchase a business, make sure you have the right counsel on your side. Yeah. Make sure you have the right professionals around it, because, you know, you do not want to look back and say, wow, I missed out on an opportunity.
Correct.
Or I gave up more than I should have when you didn't have to. So
correct. The other thing I would say, the other structure I'm working with too, where the owner is thinking about selling his company maybe 4 or 5 years down the road to an outside third party buyer, because they are the right size. I mean, they have a lot of substance. They're big. You know, they have $10 million of EBITDA, right? But the owner knows that he needs to prove, right, to the market that he can sustain that kind of earnings potential, right? So he may have gotten to 10 million, but that was only 1 year. So now he has to show the market that I can do that year after year after year, because if I can't show that, no one's going to pay me for it, right? So the question then becomes, well, I need, and in this case, and in most cases, the owner says, well, I need my key people to help me get this done, right? I can't do it myself. They need to be on board with this. So how do you give them a piece of the pie? Even though you're not selling to them, you're allowing them to share in that upside, right? And so one of the things I recently did was, it was an S corp. We converted it to an LLC, excuse me. And for the three or four key people that this owner identified are essential to getting that earning stream stabilized or growing, so that when he goes back in 3 or 4 years from now, he's going to get a nice offer for his business. What we have done for those people, those key people, is we've granted them profits interests in the LLC, right? And to them, it's tax free. So they get a profits interest, and he's given away 30% of, he's given a 30% profits interest to these, I think there's four people. So what happens is they don't pay tax on the grant of that interest to them, right? Because they don't have anything right now, because if the company were to liquidate, they would get nothing. So there's a baseline value that belongs to the existing owner. So let's assume that's $30 million, right? So the new owners come in as profit interest owners. The first $30 million of value goes to the existing owner, right? Future profits get shared 70-30. But when the sale takes place, the first 30 million goes back to that original owner. Anything above 30 million gets shared 70-30, or you could actually share it even more favorably to those key people. As long as the existing owner gets value that is there today, it works. Mm-hmm. So here's a way of saying, hey, my key people, I want to cut you in. If you stay with me and you work with me and we get this up to this level, you're gonna get 30% of the upside, right? In my example, anything above $30 million,
right,
that you help me build this value to, you're gonna get 30% of that. And in the meantime, you're gonna get 30% of the profits along the way. So that's another way of working with key people where you think that the exit plan is not selling to them, but selling to a big player in the marketplace, but you want to engage them. You want to keep them engaged. You want to share with them, and you want to reward them for their efforts to get you there. So that's another plan design that I just basically was working on, where it worked out well. I mean, the key employees are excited about that. They're going, "Wow, I walk away with millions of dollars." You know,
yeah,
I'm pretty much set for life. You know, I it's great.
And it all goes back to, all these scenarios go back to
time
is on your side.
Right.
And you can't really start planning for this.
These things take time because I have to, exit planning to me, and you know this, Pablo, it's a team sport, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't have all the answers to all the questions. I don't. But I know the questions to ask, but I don't have all the answers. So it takes a team of advisors where the owner is the center of the universe, if you will, and it takes a team of advisors to weigh in and to offer their suggestions and their input and their perspectives, and that takes time, to get all those things out in the open, to make sure you address everything. You know what we haven't addressed, and we talk about transferring ownership and in the cases we just spoke about, but what about estate plan? What kind of estate plan is there in place for that owner? How about financial planning? I mean, the other thing I usually get them to talk about when we talk about transferring their business sometime now or in the future is, especially if they're solely owned businesses, is contingency planning, right? What if you can't go to work tomorrow? What happens to your company? Do you have a plan?
Yep.
Should you have a plan? Because, what could happen is something happens to you. You can't go to work. Now, who knows? I mean, your key employees, even though they like you, they like your family, if they don't see you anymore and you're the person that makes the whole thing run, you're the big business developer, or what have you, everything runs around and runs through you, they're gone. They're going to leave to go find some other employment. So your company is probably going to shut down. And then you have all this debt you probably personally guaranteed. Well, that's going to transfer to your estate. And, you're looking at possible bankruptcy. So you have to start thinking about contingency planning as well, just in case you can't make it to the end zone, right? You're marching downfield, but if you can't get there, you certainly don't want to put your family's financial security at risk because you didn't do basic contingency planning to deal with death or permanent disability. That we call them the 5 Ds, right? Death, disability, divorce, disagreement, and disruption. But disagreements, disruption, and divorce usually can be managed with good agreements, right? You could have buy sells or prenuptials and stuff like that. But death and disability, I don't think you could put something in writing that makes that stuff go away or deals with that. But there are strategies and plans you can put in place. I usually put together something called business continuity instructions, where I tell the owner, let's sit down and figure out what's going to happen to your family, what's going to happen to your business. Let's write it all out and let's write down a plan. And oftentimes, there is insurance involved in that planning, and we put together something that, if God forbid something happens to them, their families are not just devastated.
Yep. Well, another point actually, that I just thought of, just because we've come across it actually in the last couple of years, is, and it's something that I think you need to think about both on the buy side and the sell side. Obviously you have stock sale, you have asset sale. One of the things that, we came across in the event of a stock sale, and this related, obviously, in this case, it was an S corp, is inherited tax issues. if you're acquiring, you know, let's say 100% of this business, it's a stock sale. Something that we came across was one, post sale, you know, the selling party, not really, you know, being willing to kind of, work, with, the new, buyer when tax season came around and when you need to get answers on certain things. Two was just, unforeseen issues, on the tax side. And a lot of these things could have been avoided had, you know, the right, you know, people been involved, in the beginning, but, I'll tell you what an absolute, mess, a little bit of a headache and, kind of unfortunate, but something that we had to work through and, certainly was, I think a lesson to, a few folks, that kind of went through frustration of this.
Yeah. You're talking about, if someone buys stock of an existing company, you buy all their liabilities, including the ones that you don't know about, right?
Correct.
And there could be tax liabilities there too, right? Because I've seen it in my career where, you know, people, because they want to buy stock, right? They want to do a stock sale. The buyer wants a stock. The seller wants a stock sale. And the buyer wants one too, because, you know, the company may have a lot of contracts and a lot of things that are not assignable. And you don't want to buy, if you do an asset sale, then you have to go reapply for all kinds of licenses and agreements. And why do that? Just buy the shares and everything stays the same as far as those agreements are concerned, right? You don't have to redo them.
Right.
Unless, of course, they have termination clauses that could be triggered if there is a transaction, which is something that, again, good planning. That's why you planning timing is important, how much time you give yourself. You may spot those things. You may have to fix them. But so you inherit all those undisclosed and unknown liabilities, some of which could be tax related, right? In a tax world, I've seen, you know, companies and, you know, of course, the buyer is going to get a basis step up. You know, he buys shares because they use 338H10, which is a code section that allows a buyer of S Corporation stock to treat it as an asset sale. So everyone's happy. You know, the buyer gets to get a basis step up. The seller, it's probably almost the same. They pretty much get capital gain treatment because most of the gain is attributable to capital assets, intangibles. Although there is a difference there, and they can deal with that with some kind of gross up provision, but the thing is that if that company has not, you know, complied with all their tax filing obligations, not so much with the federal government because that's pretty easy to determine, but it's the state nexus stuff, right? It's the sales and income tax rules, the 50 of them, because they're all different across the country that they just didn't pay attention to, or they just, you know, didn't want to deal with. And if the buyer's due diligence team doesn't surface them and make them an issue, then, you know, it could be the buyer's is going to be on a hook for those. You know, if the states come forward and say, well, you were doing business in our state, you never filed tax returns. So now you go back and file. So those issues you have to be aware of. And
And I think it's important on both the buyer and the seller side. I mean, if you're on the if you're on the sell side, you want to have the most, we'll call it, attractive business that you can have. And if you get into diligence with a good, sophisticated seller, they're going to uncover a lot of these things. They're going to see this. So,
and you want to make sure you clean those up, because if you don't clean them up and you say, let them find it. Cause I had a guy tell me, I'm not doing, like, I told him, look, you have nexus in these 10 states. You should file tax returns. He goes, I'm not going to do it. I go, if you're going to sell your business, someone's going to find out about it. Sure enough, couple of years later, he sold a business. Buyer's due diligence team came in and said, wait, we see a lot of exposure in these 10 states. So you know what the buyer did? Escrowed money. So, you know, they took a certain part of the purchase
money off the table
and put it over here and said, okay, we're going to go settle those back taxes that you didn't take care of. We'll take care of them and we have the money to do it. So you're going to pay for it sooner or later, right? So you're better off taking care of it up front and getting it off the table, because most likely the buyer is going to find it, and then it becomes a deal point and an issue and something to negotiate and all that stuff. So it's important to note, it's important to get a handle on these issues before you take your business to market. It's you know, that's one of the things, right? Making sure your all your compliance stuff is in order, and all your legal house is in order, right? Do you have contracts with your customers? Do you have contracts with your suppliers? And more importantly, are those contracts sign them.
Right.
So I seen a deal blow up because the supplier, this company had two main suppliers that didn't have an assignability clause to their contracts. They could veto a change of ownership. They could withdraw their supply. And they did.
Yep.
The guy was going, he told them, I'm going to sell my business to XYZ. And they go, well, we don't want to do that. We don't like XYZ. And so we're not going to supply you anymore. And that killed the deal. So, you know, again, takes time to understand these things, to look at these things, and to take care of them.
Yep. And I think one last thing just to highlight there too is, you know, one of the things that we talked about is, you know, making sure you have the right people on the team, making sure you have the right advisors around you. It's so important to make sure that they're all talking to each other.
Correct.
You know, I've been involved in situations where there were decisions made, tax decisions made, and this was not in an M&A process, but just in the ordinary course of business where there was an election made by a legal team. It didn't surface itself until months later with the accountants, and it posed a very, very large tax bill. And, you know, there was a lot of work that had to be done to kind of unwind it. And it was as a result of just people not talking to each other. So, you know, making sure that everybody's talking to each other.
Right. That goes back to the team approach, right? And it's it's a collaborative effort. Everyone needs to be open and transparent, and they need to be talking to one another. It's in the best interest of the client that happens, right? But oftentimes it doesn't, right? A lot of times it doesn't. But, you know, I always say that, look, I want your accountant to be involved, your CPA to be involved, your attorney to be involved, your insurance person to be involved. Whoever your key strategic advisors are, they need to be involved in this process because they may know something that I don't know. They may know something that you don't know, or maybe have forgotten. But you know, or something that they did that has an impact here, or maybe something they can do. But listen, no one has all the answers, and that's why it takes a collaborative team approach, and that's what we preach, and that's what I preach. I look forward to working with everyone. I think I don't see it as a threat. I see it as a value add to the client.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Mike, thanks for being with us today. This was great. Obviously, we're recording this right at the start of Small Business Week. And, you know, obviously, you know, we work with a lot of, you know, small businesses. And I know you've been working quite a bit with sellers, you know, in particular, through business transition specialists. So we look forward to, you know, hopefully working with you a bit more in the future, and really appreciate your time today.
Pablo, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure being on this podcast with you. And, you know, I've been admiring your firm. You've been growing in leaps and bounds. You're doing great things. And, you know, it's I'm very happy for you. And I know your group over there, and you guys are an excellent group. Very proactive, very conscientious, and excellent CPAs. So best of luck in the future to you.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Roads and Riches podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please consider liking, subscribing, commenting. Let us know how we're doing. And if you're an individual or a business that's in need of accounting services, maybe you're in the market for a new CPA, whether it be tax, accounting, fractional CFO services for your business, or transaction advisory services if you're contemplating a transaction, you should consider using Alpine Mar, the CPA firm that's redefining the accounting industry. You can head on over to alpinemar.com or roadsandriches.com to learn more about us and find a contact form to get in touch. Find out if we can be a good fit for you. We'll see you next time on the Roads and Riches podcast.